Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Graham and I'm an alcoholic. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms, which are across the main foyer up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Remember, the person next to you might be listening. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. And now I'm going to read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not aligned with any sect. I don't know why I'm laughing, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm happy, sorry. Denomination, politics, organization, or institution does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So we're really glad you're all here tonight. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So this evening, you're getting 3-for-1, and it's not often that that happens. Tonight, you're getting step 5, 6, and 7 all at one go. Ooh. So I think you'll agree that's quite something. So I'm just going to go ahead and read. We've got some readings to get through tonight. The first reading's rather long, so it's like two long paragraphs, but I'm just going to read them anyway, so try and stay with me. It's on page 72. And it's having made our personal inventory is how it starts on page 72. So I've just got to go ahead and read it and then these guys can start to share on it. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us have thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's David.
Hi, David.
I'm grateful to be here and grateful to be sober tonight. I'm a guy who really enjoyed getting drunk. I really liked drinking. I really liked what alcohol did for me. I drank from the time I was a teenager. I met you guys when I was 22 years old. I was very near death at that time from alcohol and all the other dry goods that were available. I tried to quit. I tried to moderate. I believed that I had power and control over it. I thought it was my idea. I tried many different ways to shape up and be a good guy. I dropped out of high school, then I dropped back into high school, put the plug in the jug, and finished honor roll. All that proved to me that I was I had this thing. So I'm a reluctant member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not want to give up what alcohol. I was willing to trade what alcohol did to me for what it did for me, for a long, long time, and it worked really well. It was the exact missing ingredient in my psyche for a long, long time, and I really wanted it to be an option, you know. And when I came here, you guys kind of suggested that. I already kind of knew this one day at a time thing was a ruse, you know. You meant I was going to have to stop drinking for the rest of my life. I did not like that. That was frightening to me. So I tried to avoid it for a long, long time. I came in and out of here for 6 years, from age 23 to age 28. I was 6 months abstinent of alcohol completely when I was willing to give up for the first time completely. 6 months sober and suicidal. I knew two things. I knew that I was going to get drunk, and I knew that I did not want to drink anymore. And so, you know, you run that through the computer, and it just came up, why don't you just kill yourself? And I really didn't want to do that. So I came back one more time and was willing to take that first part of that first step. A militant atheist, did not want to hear anything about God. You guys helped me with that. You guys helped me to substitute the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous, and pretty soon I find myself writing this inventory. I'm a guy who would have told you I wasn't afraid of anything when I got here, but there were many, many things, actually not many, many things, there were two or three things that I was never going to tell another living soul. As, you know, take it to the grave stuff, we kind of refer to that around here. So I found out in my inventory, you know, that I had all the resentments. Those were easy to spot, but I was afraid. I was afraid of being alone. My number one fear is a fear of being alone, and I mean forsaken, friendless, without resource or pity or anything. And then my number two fear is a fear of people, and that was when I kind of noticed that in black and white that. No wonder I need chemicals to get along in the world. So, you know, and even humorous stuff, like even in the resentments thing, I noticed that apparently for the first time in my life, it was revealed to me that if you embarrass me, I want to kill you. There are many examples of that. And so that stuff's easy to talk about, but I wasn't in a hurry to tell anybody anything. So I had a sponsor, and And he was patient with me, and it took me a while to get the fourth step written. And I knew that he was the guy. I knew he was the person that I was going to try to trust. And I drove over there like I was driving to my own execution, you know. I really, the only thing I think that got me over there was the realization that I didn't have to tell him anything. I could skip a few lines if I wanted to. There was some stuff that I wasn't even willing to write down. And that's all I know is that I tried to avoid this step as long as I comfortably could, and then ultimately I did. So I think we get into the promises of that later. But it was a flawed effort at best at first. But those things that I was going to take to my grave, I was able to leave with him that day. Right.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ryan.
I'm a little bit like David. I tried, this was something that I did kind of as a last resort. I definitely wanted to have some kind of other solution to what was wrong with me. I wanted the doctors to be able to fix me. I wanted my families to be able to fix me. I wanted them to be able to give me a magical pill and just feel better and life would be grand. What I really wanted to do was just kind of handle it on my own, because that's the kind of person I am. I walk around most of the time thinking that no matter what I encounter, I will figure my way out of it. But alcoholism was something that I just could not figure my way out of, and I was very confused. I got to a point where I was actually looking forward to doing this. I was a person who very much wanted to do it. I had quite enough, and what I really wanted to know was, like, how do I make it stop? You know, for the love of God, please tell me how to make it stop. Because I was found myself in a situation where whether I was drunk or whether I was sober, I was in incredible amounts of pain. And this was a terrifying step for me. And I remember driving over there just being freaked out, like, okay, we're going to do this, and, like, wondering to myself if anyone had ever, like, puked in the middle of a fifth step or anything, because I was, like, that jacked up about it. But I was going to get it done. I was not a person who tried to avoid this, like it talks about here. I wanted to do all of it. One thing I do like about this is it reminds me what I'm trying to do here, which is to get a new relationship with my Creator. I always think that I'm doing this so that I can, like, stop drinking and feel better. But it really is about that relationship with God. Because when I work on that stuff, the drinking and the pain and all those other things, all those other problems that I have this weird way of just sorting themselves out. So that's all I got.
Thanks, guys. Okay, we're going to continue on page 73 with More Than Most People on page 73. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking.
You bet it does. I love that line. He trembles to think that someone might have observed him, because I come to revolted and disgusted by the things I'm capable of doing on my sprees, and I'm not that revolted and disgusted by them. I'm more revolted that somebody might have observed me doing them. That's the thing. Because I see myself one way. I see myself as being a nice person, a good, conscientious employee, an honest person, a good brother, a good friend. You know, I'm really a terrific guy, and I see myself that way. And now I got this inventory in my hand that shows the things that I'm capable of saying and doing, and I'm not so I'm not so good. And it was, I will say that this double life was much easier to see when I was drinking, you know. Those things could be explained by drinking. I haven't had a drink in 24 years. I've been through this fourth step, fifth step process a half a dozen times in earnest at least. And several of these last few fifth steps are things that I'm capable of doing stone cold sober. I apparently will lie to you for no good reason. So, you know, yeah, these things are made worse, but that fear and tension, when I'm drinking and I'm representing myself in the world as this nice guy, as this good employee, but then I can't pull it off, and I'm violent when intoxicated, and I'm capable of saying and doing horrible things to the people that I supposedly love, and then I come to, and you got the pain of a hangover in the first place, the pain of having to make a living in the world in the second place, and then the pain of the memory of the things that I actually did. And I had no choice but to drink for a long time because of that. Right?
Yeah, what this always reminds me of is like what a big old fake I am. It wasn't too long, I think it was about a year ago, I was cleaning out a bunch of files on my computer and I came across something that I had written, and apparently I was drunk when I did it because I thought that like FSLLZ was a word, but the general, the idea of that thing was that I was like this selfish, lying, fake person, and I definitely was that. I've always wanted to be Little Miss Perfect. I mean, I wouldn't have told you that. I would be like, yeah, I'm human, I make mistakes, but I never wanted people to know that I made mistakes. I never wanted anybody's help. I'll figure it out, thank you very much. And I was able to do that for a long time. On the surface, I could present this person that had their stuff together. You know, you would see me at work every day. I was decent to people. You know, I would say my please and thank yous. And, you know, occasionally I'd do a nice thing for you, bake you cookies, you know, whatever. But behind the scenes, you would have seen a different story. You would have found a person who was, you know, plagued by these periods of depression where I found it very difficult just to, you know, like function and, you know, keep house clean and laundry done and get showers done. You know, I don't want people to know about those things. I'm not going to talk to anybody about that. And as I drank, the longer I drank, the worse it got. And it was harder and harder to keep up this facade. The person that I wanted everybody to see was, you know, I'm the military wife, I work hard, I help other people, you know, all this great stuff, but every now and again I would slip up and I might drunk dial somebody. And then the next day they're calling me up like, we had this conversation yesterday, and all of a sudden there's this like horrible knot in my stomach, like, oh crap, I just got found out. You know, that's usually when I felt bad about things, not that I had done them, but that it was that when I got found out, and I just couldn't keep up that facade. And there was that constant fear and tension. You know, today's the day it's all gonna fall apart. Today's the day, you know, somebody's gonna find something up and it's all gonna blow up. I remember being like a full 24 hours sober, laying on my couch, and I can hear my mom talking on the phone in the background, and I hear her mention my name, and I'm instantly in a panic because I'm like, oh God, what now, what now? And it turns out she was just, planning my birthday party, but like I lived in like horror because I didn't want anybody to know how screwed up I was, and this very much got me in sobriety, you know, because I came here like this like horrible broken person, and you guys helped me find a solution, and then all of a sudden I was a person with the solution, you know, and I can't have any problems anymore, and I'm not going to admit, you know, that I'm still getting angry, that I'm still having difficulty in my life. Like, I'm supposed to have all my stuff together. And I'll tell you, that is a horrible, horrible place to be like stone cold sober. At least when I was drinking, I could like forget about it for a while. but doing it sober, it is rough. Cause it's like this weird combination of like pride and dishonesty. Cause I have to do a lot of lying to keep up this facade. One of my favorite lies to tell is, you know, how you doing? Fine. You know, I joke with a friend of mine. It's like, you always have to ask me how I'm doing twice, because the first time I'm going to lie to you. I don't like admitting that I have a problem. But it was a horror, especially at the end, because I became afraid of what I was capable of doing to other people, and it was not fun. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go on to page 75 now. When we decide on page 75. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory and we're prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we've taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe.
Yeah, both of these paragraphs absolutely tally with my experience, with the exception, you know, I've always done this work with sponsors, so I didn't have to make a huge decision about who was to hear the story, and I didn't have to explain to them much about what we were doing. Although I do use some of these lines with the men that I sponsor, I always refer to this as a life and death errand, and I always thank them for their confidence in me to offer that fifth step to me. So again, I'm ready to pocket my pride and go to it. I'm driving to my execution over to this man's house, and he was a guy that I admired. He had skills with his hands. He was a bricklayer, but like a technical guy. He built chimney stuff for industrial applications. But he was also a master wood guy. And so he had this whole. There's a word for that. Carpenter. Yeah. I'm heading to my happy place. So. So he had this whole like garage converted into all kinds of tools and things, and he knew what to do with them. You could see evidence of his work around fine furniture and little toys for children, and all those tools were outlines of them were up on the wall. You know what I mean? I mean, he knew what he was the kind of guy I wanted to be like. I always wanted to have a skill like, you know, I'd sit on a bar stool talking about I'm going to learn how to do stuff like that one day, you know. I never did. I don't have any skills. I'm a failed musician. I've just never really pulled much off that took any effort, particularly sustained effort. But anyway, I drive over there and I go back to this woodshed. I almost smell the place, and I sat in there and I read my pitiful little inventory, and then he matched me along the way. He did an extraordinary thing. He talked about the things that he had done that were similar and the way that he had felt about it and what his sponsor told him about it. And we got to the end and he said, is there anything else? Anything you didn't write down? And there I was with stuff I hadn't written down that I'd been dragging around with me. And I suppose it was grace, but I had a choice to make in that moment. And I just let go of it. Like, oh, the things that I was too ashamed even to write down. And darned if he hadn't done the exact same stuff. The details were different, but the same stuff. And I really had the experience that's described here. I felt the weight leave me. The things that I'd been hiding, the things that I'd been ashamed of, the things that disallowed me from meeting you and looking you in the eye. And I remember driving home feeling very, very differently, beginning to have this spiritual experience, feeling peace and ease, feeling like I belonged in the world for the first time in a long time. I can't remember. So that absolutely was my experience. But the thing that's critical about that is that he was willing to bring his stuff to me too. I trusted him, but he gave back. And that's something, I don't want to leak into the 10th step or anything, but that has set in motion a pattern with me. There are men in my life today that I'm very quick to discuss my flaws with, my pettiness, my resentments, my fears, my malfeasance, any of those things. I'm able to just say it. And they don't say things to me like, how's that working for you, David? They say stuff to me like, yeah, I had something like that happen yesterday. Here's what that looked like. And so we get to walk together flawed, but we get to walk together in this, right?
Yeah, this idea of illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past is always very meaningful to me. During the first 2 years that I was sober, I actually ended up doing a full-scale fourth and fifth step like 4 times. It's not because that's what you're supposed to do. It's because I change sponsors a lot. I don't particularly like them. They all want to tell me what to do, and I'm like, I don't want to listen to you. I'm going to find somebody else. And so they all wanted me to redo this, but I'll tell you that first inventory I wrote, I did exactly what I was supposed to do. I did exactly what I was asked to do, and I walked out of that fifth step, and I went about my business, and I felt like I still had a closet full of crap, and I couldn't figure out why. And I actually tried to talk to her about it, and he was like, just move on, you're stalling. But none of the fear went away. Early on, I remember hearing people talk a lot about resentment, and I could appreciate that. But what was really big for me was this all-consuming fear that I had. It was so bad that I couldn't even talk to people. Like me sitting up here like I am today, definitely would not have happened. I would be short of breath. I would forget what I was saying. I would be stuttering. It would be awful. I couldn't even have a conversation with you. I would remember like driving to meetings with all these like things that I wanted to talk about and you know, things that I had to say, and I would get there and nothing would come out. You know, the extent of our conversation was, hi, how are you? And then we were going to kind of like stand there awkwardly unless you were a really good conversationalist. You know, I was that consumed with fear that I couldn't even speak. The reason I didn't hold back secrets on purpose, to be honest with you, is because I just didn't know where to put it on the inventory. You know, I couldn't figure that out. And when I was about a year sober, I had an opportunity. You know, somebody asked me, you know, for those nooks and crannies, and I took the opportunity to do it. And it's funny because it wasn't even so much stuff that I had done, you know, because I was actually a person who walked into inventory going like, this thing isn't even bad enough. I need like some worse stuff on here. You know, not that I was like Little Miss Perfect, but I didn't think it was bad enough. But it was about thoughts that I had. I've had some very, very crazy, messed up thoughts that no human being is ever supposed to think, you know, and just the thought that I had even considered that kind of stuff was a torture to me from a very young age. And so when those things came out, these promises or these predictions came true for me. You know, I walked out of that fifth step and was driving home, and all of a sudden I felt connected to people. You know, I was sitting there by myself, but I was like that peace. There was no more chatter in my head, you know. And it was amazing because that fear started to fall for me, especially when I proceeded to start talking to other folks about, you know, the 12 steps and alcoholism. All of a sudden I could talk to people, I could relate to people. You know, it was just this incredible life-changing experience. You know, these steps have done far more for me than just help me stop drinking, you know, because man, you stay sober long enough, and that's not even the issue. It's like I can't live like this. I'm like David. I wanna kill myself when I'm sober. And man, this just opened up a whole new world for me. It was an amazing experience.
Thanks. Continuing on page 75, and it's right at this last paragraph at the bottom. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we've done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put in the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand?
This piece wasn't part of my first time through, but it's been since pointed out to me that these are very important post-game instructions here. As I'm riding home feeling all spiritual and one with the world and having this experience, I've still got some more work to do. And I'm nerdy enough that I have the experience of going home and putting this book on the shelf so that I could take it off the shelf. And I know, it's pathetic, but I'm not going to do my fist up here. So it tells me what to do. I take the book off. I say a prayer. I thank God from the bottom of my heart that I know Him better. I take the book down, carefully reading the first five proposals. And it was told to me that he's talking about the steps. Have I omitted anything? And like Ryan pointed out, it's reminding me, because we're building this arch, we're trying to have this spiritual experience that's going to free us from the hell that is untreated alcoholism. And he makes some analogies here with building and skimping on the cement. And I've just always treated that like just a review, you know, of the steps. As I look at step one, have I really bought into this idea? Have I really accepted this idea that I am, in fact, powerless over alcohol, that it's really not up to me whether I drink or not? You know, do I have this disease? And can I solve the problem myself? You know, or is something else going to restore me to sanity? And have I made a decision to get on with the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do these things to recover from this disease? And then obviously, have I left anything out of my inventory that needs to be discussed with someone? And that's it. It's just a set of instructions, but it does touchstone me back to why I'm here and how I got to this fifth step in the first place and where it fits in the kind of in the chain. And I've never had anything. I've always expected something to come from that, and like, oh, I left this out, as I've done this, I'm usually able to answer to my satisfaction. Right?
I did go home and sit for an hour. That prospect is always horrifying for me. Like, what, just sit and be quiet? That just never sounded exciting. But I did do it, and I just remember something popped into my head. I had that I hadn't talked about inventory. It wasn't even a big deal, but I had like backed into a car and just kind of sort of drove away. And so I had admitted something, and it wasn't a crisis that didn't happen. I just talked to my sponsor the next day. This is what I forgot, and that was the end of it. That's it.
Thank you. So now we're on page 76. If we can answer on page 76, if we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can He now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing.
Yeah, my sponsor pointed out that these are two very short paragraphs dealing with 6 and 7, and he was very explicit. He said there's a reason why these are short paragraphs, because in step 6 and 7, David, you're not the one doing the heavy lifting. And in this first paragraph, he says willing about, well, at least twice I have it circled, but it seems to be all about willingness. And what have I found out that's objectionable? Not just the disgusting things that I don't want to tell. I've found out that I'm incredibly selfish. I view the entire world in terms of how it affects me. Like, I always thought selfishness was greed. I had it equated up with being greedy, and I don't identify myself as being a greedy person. But I've kind of learned that that this selfishness is this self-obsession, this over-concentration on David and what David's getting and how things are going to work out for David. And did you know what David, what they did to David, and how they mistreated David, and they don't appreciate David, and they don't pay David enough, and the you know, just goes on and on and on. The whole world and the way that I relate to it is through this lens of just self, just me. And you guys aren't measuring up too well. And I'm scared to death. I'm scared, and it really is. And when I saw in the fear inventory, when I really got the idea of the insanity, of course, the first example of being afraid of being alone and a fear of people, I've got all these 180 degree fears. You know, I'm scared of failing. You know, I'm scared of success. That made no sense to me for a long time, but I realized that, you know, if you're successful, you can't be lazy. I don't like that. I don't really, you know, if you're successful, they might expect something out of you if you're successful. You might have to pony up all that stuff you put on your resume. You know, and I don't want to work that hard. So I got, you know, I'm afraid of success. I'm afraid she's going to leave. I'm afraid she's going to stay. You know, so all these things are objectionable. It's self-centered life, all about me, and I'm scared to death. So am I willing to let the Father have these things? And then and that's just a question. Am I willing? And if I'm not, I have an instruction. I can pray for the willingness to have that removed, or I can proceed, right?
Yeah, sometimes I hear people talk in meetings about like holding on to character defects, and that was like always a little bit perplexing to me, because I was like, why on this earth would you want to hold on to that stuff? You know, as much as I always thought that I was a bit of a walking contradiction, like Dave was talking about, but I always thought that I was like this girl that could like overcome anything. But if I was honest with you, I was actually a person who was like really confused by life. Like the most basic stuff that other people just seem to be able to do without thinking. They could like get up in the morning and they could function okay. They seem to be able to like meet people and talk to people and like make friends. You know, I was 30 years old and, you know, I'm like this alcoholic mess, and I have all these other people from like high school, and they're like married and they're having kids and they're successful in their careers. Like normal life stuff was confusing to me, and I remember even from a very young age wondering what the heck was wrong with me. You know, like I was like, you know, yeah, I haven't had a perfect life, I've had this or that happen, like why do I hurt this bad? You know, why does it hurt so bad? And I could never figure it out. And when I wrote that inventory and I saw all those defects and the way that they had just wreaked havoc in my own life and caused me to behave in these like horrible, horrible ways, like I did not want to hold on to that stuff. Like those things were like these painful, horrible, like torturous things to me. So I was perfectly happy to let God remove them. And I'll tell you, step six, the longer I've stayed sober has meant more and more to me, because it's really hits home this idea that I can't change myself. I can't fix myself. Like, I really think that I should be able to recognize the fact that I'm being selfish and self-centered, or that, you know, maybe I'm acting like a brat or whatever it is that I find objectionable. I think that I should recognize that and be able to change my own behavior. And what I've discovered is I can't change my own behavior. And it's funny that I always think that I can, because I have like a lifetime history, you know, of so many promises to myself about how I'm going to do things differently and how things are going to be better, and like trying so hard and putting all this work to do it only to watch it fall apart. And the reason is, it wasn't because of like I magically changed my mind one morning and was like, you know what, yes, I do want to be a disaster after all. It's because try as hard as I might, I just can't fix myself. You know, I just can't do it. I've got to have God's help for that stuff. So, thank you.
Thank you. This is the last paragraph we're going to read tonight. It's just there on page 76. It's the seven-step prayer. When ready, we say something like this. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We've then completed step 7.
Yeah. So I'm willing that the Creator should have all of me, both good and bad. And my prayer is that He remove from me every single defect of character. Oh, that makes David feel bad? No, that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. And grant me your strength as I go out from here. I must not have enough. I need power to do your bidding. Amen. That's it. We've now completed step 7. And I don't want to, well, of course I do, take other people's inventory. But
go on.
You do hear an awful lot of confusing things about, and maybe I'm just missing the more subtle points of this. But I was told specifically that David doesn't work on David's character defects. If you could have fixed your character defects, you would have done that a long time ago. The therapist would have done it. The happy pills would have done it. The church would have done it. The new girlfriend, the gym membership, the diet, the new job, the book, that new book. Oh, I love books. Go get me some books. I'm going to fix me, you know. And I love that. I love the hope, you know, that I get, you know, on the way home from Barnes & Noble. This is going to do it, you know. And it's all like lazy stuff appeals to me, you know, like whatever, like 5-minute abs or, you know, shortcut to enlightenment, you know. I mean, I buy books like that, you know, instant karma. So I don't, you know, I was told that this is a daily practice and that I'm to bring the willingness, and that the purpose of this is that I can be of use to you and to my fellows. Not so that I feel better, not so that I get the goodies, not so my life gets better, my waist gets slimmer, you know, all that kind of stuff. I'm here to be of use. There's a lot of examples where, you know, pride, oh my God, pride bad, pride's bad. We'd all agree on that, you know. Pride goeth before the fall, for goodness sakes, you know. But it's like, I can tell you that pride has kept me sober, you know. I mean, for no other reason than I didn't want to show up drunk, you know, or make you right about me, you know. I've shown up at meetings for no better reason other than I told this guy that I would be there. I don't want to go. I don't want to go now. But I don't want to look bad either, you know. I don't want to be thought of like that. I have a reputation, and I go to the meeting. And then I end up meeting somebody that changes my whole life, and I look back on it and go, oh, it's a good thing I was at that meeting, you know. But, you know, kind of like Ryan was saying, I don't think I'm qualified to discern either, you know, what is the good fear and what is the bad fear and what, you know, I don't know. This seems to tell me to turn in all things towards Him and to ask for the strength. And then there's more steps to do after that. I don't believe in getting stuck on step 7. I have no use for that. There's no reason to be stuck. You pray for willingness and you move on. There's amends to make. There's coffee to be made. There's people to help, people to greet. So there's no reason to stop here. Ryan?
Alrighty. I remember one time I was sitting there reading this, the ABCs with this guy, where it says, was it A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, and C, that God could and would if He were sought. And they looked at me and he's like, do you believe that God could and would? And I looked back at him and I said, no, I sure don't. And the reason was not that I didn't think that there was like an all-powerful God that like could do something, because that's like a simple thing. If you're God and you're all-powerful, it's like whatever, no big deal. But I didn't believe that God would. I don't know. I couldn't explain it at the time, but it was just that I'm not good enough for this. God's not going to help me. I'm bad. I've just done all this horrible stuff, and you know, I'm just going to kind of be out here on my own. And that's one of the things I appreciate in this prayer, is that it says good and bad. What I've discovered is that God doesn't really seem to care that I've made mistakes in the past. God doesn't really seem to care even that I continue to mess up all the time. God's just kind of glad that I'm like on His team nowadays. Sometimes I get this like image of God, and he's like, I don't know, sitting up in a cloud or something somewhere, and he's like looking down at me like, Ryan, what the heck are you doing? You know, stop that. Go help some people. You know, it doesn't seem to matter that about the mistakes. That's a good reminder for me. And those defects, you know, it's funny. I knew we were going to be talking about this tonight, and I was thinking about this prayer the other day, and I'm not 100% certain that a single one of my defects have actually been removed. They all seem to still exist, and they're kind of like hanging out in the background, waiting for me to like not do what I need to be doing, and all of a sudden they like flare out. I am just as capable today as behaving poorly as I was way back in the day. Fortunately, today I have a way to set those things right. But they will. They'll still come back to me. I'll tell you, there is one time when every single defect of character that I have absolutely vanishes. Absolutely vanishes. And that's when I'm taking the time to talk to a newcomer. Because when I'm taking the time to talk to a newcomer, there's no use for any of those defects. You cannot help another person while you're sitting there judging the heck out of them. At least I found I haven't been able to. I can't help another person when I'm sitting there trying to be a control freak with them and micromanage their lives. You know, most people, I will hang around for that stuff for a little while, but at some point they're going to be like, screw you, woman. I ain't listening to you anymore. It's none of your business. You know, I can't help another person when I'm trying to get something from them. Whatever it is, approval or obedience or any of that stuff. This is where a kind of a switch happened for me. Prior to this, all the steps were kind of about me and fixing myself and doing all that jazz. But after this step, it kind of came about other people. You know, I needed to stop worrying about myself so much and stop focusing on myself so much and start helping out the newcomer. I swear, within like a week or two, my sponsor was like, there's a newcomer, go talk to him, you know. And I was very much into that. So that's all I got.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'll thank David and Ryan for sharing. And at this point, we're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. There's three of them in there. You guys don't mind splitting them up. Thank you. The seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And at this point, I'll ask if there's any AA-related announcements. Leslie. Could you, I'm sorry, Liz, I didn't catch that. Could you speak up a little bit?
Yeah,
sorry.
Sure.
Where is that center, please?
25th and Llewellyn.
So there's a Thanksgiving dinner with people in AA if you don't have anywhere to go on Thursday and you don't want to sit on your own thinking about what he did to you. Lisa? Hi, Lisa. That's from 6 in the morning,
yeah,
right through,
yeah,
till 9 at night.
What time shopping center?
In Virginia Beach. Any other announcements, Lydia?
My name is Lydia, I'm an alcoholic. On December 19th at 5:30, Ailish will be sharing her experience, strength, and hope at the ODU 49th Street Living Sober Meeting. Please come and join us and we'll have cake for no reason.
Thank you. Any other announcements? We've got one. This home group's putting on a supper and a speaker here on January the 13th. And Jerry W's coming to talk. So the food is at 6 o'clock. And the speaker's at 7. So everybody's welcome. It's on January the 13th. We've got some green flyers. So please feel free to take some if you want. They're on the literature table up at the back. And take them and hand them out if you feel so inclined. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise one of your hands. Newcomers, is there anybody in the first 30 days of sobriety? We'd like to welcome you. Okay. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. And in closing, with thanks to all who participated tonight, after we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at the Mexican restaurant on... Where is that? Where is that charming place?
Where is it?
22nd and Colonial. 22nd and Colonial in Norfolk. Now, really, you don't want to miss out because the ambience is second to none. It really is. They have plastic donkeys on the ceiling, and it's just really a good time. There's a lot of people sober there. And, you know, when I got sober, I really was very, very uncomfortable around people in general. And going out to the meeting after the meeting really saved my bacon many times. Just sitting there, being around people that were not drinking and they seemed to be having fun. Yeah. And so please don't, if you want to come, you're very welcome. You don't even really need to have anything to eat. You can just come along. As long as the waiter doesn't catch you, you're fine. Because he will say something if he does catch you. Okay, anyway, whatever. So... someone has volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page 164. John?
I'm John, an alcoholic.
Hey, John. Hey, John.
All right, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Until then.
Thank you. And for those that care to join us, we're going to make a circle and say the Lord's Prayer. Thank you.